Okay, welcome everyone to the A-Bomb Energy Podcast, where we discuss everything automotive, and sometimes we get into the geopolitics of things, because most of you guys know I'm still active duty, special operations, I'm a special operations medic, and, you know, honestly, the things that we are dealing with in the automotive industry, politics and the nuances of that sometimes gets involved. I mean, whether we're talking government regulations or we're talking about stuff, especially with the electric vehicle movement, that is highly intertwined within politics. They're kind of one and the same. And unfortunately, it's like that, but it shouldn't be like that, because cars should be cars, politics should be politics. But so for some reason, politics has infested itself into the automotive industry, and it's highly irritating. For example, we look at things like the electric vehicles. The left side of the political spectrum seems to be just championing, you know, electric vehicles. We have to have electric vehicles. Gas power cars need to completely go away. And the left seems to be just completely against anything fossil fuel related, yet they all pretty much drive fossil fuel cars. And then the right is completely against all electric vehicles. We shouldn't have a single electric vehicle on the road. And when it comes to the vehicle segment here, I'm in the middle. I think we should have both. I think we should have electric vehicles and we should have gas-powered vehicles. Because, hear me out, if we have both, that will drive more competition within the market. And if you are a electric vehicle guy or you're a gas-powered engine kind of guy, each one of those vehicles is going to drive the other one to be better, because they're both going to be trying to outperform and outcompete the other vehicle. So why wouldn't you want both vehicles on the road? That doesn't make sense to me. So for me, I want them both on the road. Now, I think most of you guys know that I'm investigating the Chinese vehicles that are potentially trying to break into the US market. And I've spent a ton of time, a ton of my own money trying to figure this out, because I went, you know, obviously, I think most of you guys know I went to Costa Rica to drive Chinese vehicles, both electric and gas powered, because it would be very disingenuous to make a video, a documentary on these vehicles, and yet I hadn't driven one. Come on, let's be real. Now, I will say this. I had a lot of preconceived notions before driving those vehicles. And to be honest with you, my intuition and my suspicions were completely correct. I did change my mind on a couple things. One being, I think that the Chinese electric vehicles are actually not that bad. I don't think they're great, though. I think, in my opinion, a Tesla drives better. A Tesla is just better all around. Interior-wise, I thought a Tesla was nicer. It's more, and these are all preference things. I think the technology inside, like the battery technology inside a Chinese vehicle, is probably far superior than what is in the, you know, in their competitors like Tesla and Ford and GM. I think it's way better. But here's the thing. Where did China learn how to make this technology? Well, they learned it from the United States. During COVID times, you know, whenever you want to say after COVID or before COVID, you say BC. In BC times, well, really during COVID, the U.S. government, the Department of Energy, gave a loan to a civilian company. I can't remember the name of the civilian company, but they gave a loan to the civilian company to develop battery technology. Well, because gas prices were so low during COVID, I think it was like $1.50 a gallon in some places, I think cheaper in others, we didn't need that battery technology. So then China came in and purchased that battery technology from that company. So this whole myth of, well, China, they've innovated. Look what they've done with this battery technology. They didn't develop that themselves. Number one, they learned how to manufacture electric vehicles from the United States. Really, they learned how to manufacture vehicles from the United States with the General Motors and SAIC partnership, and Ford, Hyundai, all the other brands that are out there that are in China right now, BMW, Mercedes. They learned how to manufacture vehicles from those companies. They learned how to manufacture electric vehicles from companies like Tesla. I think one of the worst things Tesla did was enter the Chinese market. Sure, they make a lot more money in China because they have more customers. However, they're creating their demise of their own brand, because China before that, really all their electric vehicles were garbage. And in most cases, a lot of the electric vehicles in China are garbage. At one point, there was over 500 brands of electric vehicles in China. And I think now we're looking at a little over 100 electric car brands in China. But still, that's regardless of the point, there's like 5 to 10 major Chinese electric vehicle brands that are in the outside market. You know, in countries like Costa Rica, Mexico, Australia is a big market for vehicles. And what has opened the door for these electric vehicles is just mainly the pricing of vehicles right now. I mean, vehicles are astronomical in prices. Base model vehicles in the United States right now, I think the cheapest one you can get is a Nissan Sentra, and you're looking at around $20,000, $25,000 for that vehicle. People are losing their minds with these prices, and it's the manufacturer's fault because they refuse to make base model vehicles. They keep throwing tons and tons of technology in these vehicles that people don't. Some people want it, sure, but a lot more people are kind of getting sick of these high prices, and they just want a cheaper base model vehicle, and manufacturers are refusing to do this. What's going to happen then is if Chinese vehicles enter the market, they are going to destroy their own brands because Chinese vehicles are offering something that these cheaper that legacy automakers can't offer, and that's cheaper vehicles. Times are getting tough right now. And they're probably going to get tougher at some point. You know, society works in up, it's works in up and downs. You know, it's always working in waves. And I don't see these manufacturers right now in the present making cheaper vehicles. So the big question that's always being asked by, you know, others online is, should these Chinese vehicles enter the United States car market? I can tell you right now, I think it's a bad idea. If they enter the market in a full force, full invasion, I think it's a bad idea. And I'll tell you why. We're going to get into the geopolitics here. And I think most of you guys know, I'm a special operations guy. And one of the things that I do is I study other governments. I study different ideologies like communism, for example. And I study a lot of different facets in society. I'll put it that way. Now, if we let these Chinese vehicles enter the U.S. market, there's going to be a couple things that are going to happen. Number one, it will drive competition, potentially it will drive competition, but I doubt it. What China is going to do if these electric vehicles enter the U.S. car market, it is going to destabilize the market in a way that's not going to be beneficial. Now, hear me out on this. China temporarily can sell vehicles at a cheaper price to gain market share. Why? Because they subsidize these vehicles with Chinese government money. What that's going to, the goal behind that, China knows that they cannot sustain selling these vehicles. For example, the BYD Seal is a vehicle, or the Seagull. These vehicles are like $10,000 in China. You're not going to get a $10,000 BYD vehicle in the United States. It's not going to happen. Okay. No, it's not. And I've talked to the experts in the industry. I've talked to people that sell the vehicles. It's in Costa Rica, for example, the cheapest BYD EV sells for like 20 grand. Why? Because they got to ship that thing over to the United or to Costa Rica. They got to ship it over to other countries. Now, people will say, well, all they need to do is build a factory in Mexico. Again, it's still not going to be $10,000 because you're not going to get the same slave labor that China practices over in China. You still have to ship all the BYD, for example, is a classic example. They have vertically integrated with the assistance of the Chinese government. They have vertically integrated at a commendable level. I'm going to be honest. Is it ethical how they've done it? No. And some of you might be like, well, why is it not ethical? Well, they have forced labor in Africa to get the cobalt, lithium, and nickel and all the other minerals that go inside of the battery technology. It's slave labor, essentially. So people like to say forced labor. It's slave labor. Let's just call it what it is. I think, you know, in YouTube land and Facebook and all that, we're going to have to call it forced labor. Because censorship, that's a thing. But it's slave labor. Now, you're not going to get that in Mexico. You're going to get cheap labor in Mexico, but it's not going to be at the same price that you're going to get it in Africa. Then those minerals, they get processed and they get shipped to China. Again, you're still getting a slave labor, a forced labor in China. And that's how they're able, and government subsidies are also coming in there, and that's how they're able to sell it for such a cheap price. A lot of people that work in that industry in China say, look, they're not making money on these vehicles. They're actually losing money. And some of the research that I'm going to show you in the documentary that I'm going to produce is going to show you that these Chinese companies are losing thousands of dollars every time they sell a vehicle. Sometimes it's more than $10,000 per vehicle that they sell. So what business model do you know of where you can sell a product and still make money on it? That doesn't exist. That is a subsidized, that is a communist form, fascist form of a business. A little man in Italy tried to form private sector and government together. Okay, communism owns all means of production. So you're not going to get those same, you're not going to get a $10,000 EV in the United States. It's just not going to happen. I know people want that. So do I. But it's just not going to happen. You're still going to look at a competitive price of, you know, $20,000 to $30,000 for these vehicles. So the question then remains, should you get a Chinese vehicle or something like a Nissan Leaf or a Tesla or, you know, a Chevy Spark or not Spark, the Chevy EV, the Bolt, you know, if should you get one of those? I don't know. That's up to you. A Rivian. A Rivian is a great vehicle, actually, for an electric vehicle. Need to get me a sip of coffee here. Get some Costa Rican coffee in me. Ooh, that is good. That's hot, though. Ooh, smokes. Now, one of the things that China is going to do in countries like Costa Rica or Mexico, or I used to see this all the time in Africa. They do this. They practice this thing called the Belt Road Initiative. Now, in Costa Rica, for example, they built things like a soccer stadium for the people there. They built their telecommunications systems there, like their critical infrastructure for their communication systems. What the reason they do that is because they're trying to gain influence in that country. Now, some people might be like, well, why would they want to gain influence in a country like Costa Rica? Well, I can tell you from a strategic standpoint, if I was China, I would definitely want to gain a strategic foothold in a country like Costa Rica. Not only is it in the backyard of the United States, you also have a ton of expats that go down there. You have a ton of Americans that travel there, and that's going to allow you to collect data on these people. Data is the new weapon right now, and China is actively working to develop a supercomputer to then process all that data. They already have all our identities at this point. They probably already have all our social security numbers. So China, if you're listening, pay off my house for me. But they already have all this information out there. They have it. They just don't know how to process it yet. And I have that on very good authority from people who work in certain agencies that have already said, look, if they get that supercomputer, that is almost world domination level. And that's already, you know, public information out there. But I know people that specifically work in the industry that have told me that, and I believe them. The other thing with that, so not only do you collect all that data, there's another strategic advantage. Let's say China goes into Costa Rica, Mexico, or whatever. They do this in other countries as well, but I'm using Latin America as an example. Let's say you build that critical infrastructure, you help with the power grid, you help with the telecommunication software, and then all of a sudden now you're bringing all these cheap electric vehicles into the country. Well, you control how those vehicles are charged, or you at least have the ability to see how much power is being consumed. Not only is that a data point, if you access that software in a malicious manner, you can then really blackmail the government of whatever country is there, and you can say, look, if you want to continue having a functional society, we're going to go ahead and charge you a little bit more money for this. We're going to go ahead and make demands for X, Y, and Z. If you don't give us these demands, then we're going to turn off all the vehicles on the road, because guess what? You are now reliant completely on electric vehicles, which again leads to the reason why I do not want a fully electric society. It is another method of control. What if a hurricane happens? What if a natural disaster happens and your vehicle's not charged up? What, are you going to run to a fast charger real quick while stuff's barreling down on you and while you don't have the range? If you have a gas-powered vehicle, you have the ability to then fuel your vehicle up and get to safety. There's so many other aspects that are associated with this. But China does this. They go into these countries like Africa, for example, with Belt Road Initiative. They will then give them these loan shark type loans where they say, hey, we're going to build this port for you. We're going to do a debt entrapment. And then these countries can't pay that loan off. They default on the loan. And then all of a sudden, now these ports that China's building all over the place, or these bridges or whatever, China then says, guess what? This is now Chinese property. It's these little details that people are kind of missing, which is unfortunate. Now, the other thing, China cannot build internal combustion vehicles very well. They're just not good at it, which is why they're switching mainly to the electric vehicles. Now, I can tell you on good authority, not only from experience, but also from people that I've talked to that are living in China, that have traveled to China, that have driven both. The consensus seems to be that, look, China can't build internal combustion vehicles, so they're going to lean heavily into the EV segment. It's a little bit easier for them to build. They can vertically integrate it better. And I can tell you, like, for an example, I drove a internal combustion vehicle called a Haval. That was probably one of the worst performance vehicles that I've driven in a really long time. Not only was there insane turbo lag in it, where there was no middle ground. It was, you press the gas pedal, you depress it about halfway, and then you're going, let's say, 50 kilometers an hour, and you're like, hey, I need to go to 55. You press it a little bit more, and now you're launching in the back of your seat because the turbo is just engaging so heavily, and it's just throwing you back. These are these little details that a lot of people aren't thinking about with the internal combustion vehicles. Their EVs, for example, are all strictly copycats for the most part. One of the vehicles I drove was a BYD Pro, which is the same thing as a Ford Escape, I think one of their eco versions. It's got the same wheels in it. Now, the other thing that was a little wild with some of these electric vehicles is the user interface was awful. It was one of the worst user interfaces I've interacted with in a long time. For example, every time I started the vehicle, I had to reconnect my phone manually. I had to turn on a hotspot to get the GPS to work. I couldn't just connect the phone and use Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. I had to always have my Wi-Fi on to get the GPS to work. And it was really weird. And I thought I was doing something wrong. I was looking stuff up online. I couldn't really find the answer. So that kind of stuff got really annoying. Every time I went to a fast charger or even a free charger or anything, there was always a problem. Every single time there was an issue. And what I can tell you is, you know, thank God the people of Costa Rica are some of the friendliest people that I've ever met and were going out of their way to help me because they're like, oh, little gringo, you can't work this machine. Yeah, I can't. I don't know what I'm doing. I can't imagine someone that's older, like, you know, or someone that's tech illiterate using a one of those charging networks there. It was very bizarre, not a fan of it, and I do not recommend that stuff. I don't know why it's not just as simple. You plug the vehicle in, you swipe your credit card, and it charges your vehicle. No, they want you to download an app. They want you to go through all these processes and all these steps. The reason they want to do that, oh, you guessed it, it's to collect your data. Because that's another way they make money off of you is by collecting your data. Not only do you install the app on your phone, now they can track your phone. They can track where you go. They can track how many miles you're driving. They can then access apps, other apps within your phone. They can access your contacts list. They can access your email. And now they can start collecting and harvesting all this data from you. That's why it's $7 to charge your vehicle for 300 kilometers or 400 kilometers. Now, the other thing with that, all of the vehicles, the electric vehicles that I drove, were off by a lot with their, at least the Chinese electric vehicles. Tesla seems to be a little bit more accurate, in my opinion, from my experience. Your mileage may vary, or your kilometers may vary. All the Chinese electric vehicles, the range estimation was way off, way off. And I know I was driving through, you know, hills and all that stuff in Costa Rica, but the thing that you have to remember, these things adapt to the driving habits of the road. They adapt to the driving habits of the driver. That's how they make their estimations. But I'm not saying it was like 30 kilometers off or even 50. There was at one point my vehicle that I was driving was 100 kilometers off on estimation. 100. That's a big problem. And some people say, well, you need to adapt to the vehicle. You need to learn the nuances of it, the little intricacies. Okay, sure. I guess I could kind of get down with that. But then now I have to deal with the difficulties of every time I want to charge, there's a problem. You know, the chargers, for example, one of the chargers I went to, there was exposed wires where the handle was. And I was like, I don't know if I should touch this. This doesn't really look safe. So there's little details like that, which is kind of bizarre. Something, I don't know if this is normal with electric vehicles, but whenever the vehicle was charging, it got really hot on the interior. Like, it got hot. Like, I could feel the heat from the battery just, like, charging. And I was like, that's kind of odd. Is that safe? I don't really know. But that's my experience with these electric vehicles in Costa Rica. There's a ton more data I'm going to share with you guys. Stay tuned to the full documentary that I'm going to be putting out, because that's going to be very interesting. Now, one other thing I want to tell you about China. They have no problem. Obviously, we've talked about the subsidizing. We've talked about that. That's how they're able to make the vehicles so cheap, and they have no problem doing slave labor. They also have no problem paying people online to influence the market. They also have no problem infiltrating governments in a subversive type way to get people to bend the knee to them, whether that is economically or some sort of information style bending the knee. But more than likely, they're doing economic warfare, which is probably what they're doing in countries like Costa Rica, Mexico. They're doing it all over Africa, by the way. That in Africa is more my mileage. I know a lot more about Africa than I do the Latin countries. But what I can tell you is they have no problem paying people in African countries to let them essentially do whatever they want. That's why they're able to do slave labor in Africa. And I wouldn't be surprised if the tactics that they're applying in Africa are the same tactics that they're applying in countries like Costa Rica, Mexico, probably not El Salvador. I'm not really too sure on that, but I can tell you Brazil, Venezuela, all these other countries, Chile, Peru. Anywhere there's Chinese electric vehicles, there is something probably odd going on there within the government sector. I'll put it that way. So just be aware of that. You know, stay frosty, I should say, on what's going on. But other than that, that's all I got. I hope you guys tune into the full documentary. I am editing it actually right after this podcast. So please let me know if you have any questions, comments, or concerns. And again, I'm not against electric vehicles. I'm against subversion via electric vehicles. So let's get that straight. Other than that, I'm out of here. Thanks, guys.